This is the Four Down Breakdown. Now for your hosts, Connor Halley and Declan Kruger.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Four Down Breakdown here on TSN 1260 as we spend the next couple hours talking all things NFL. We're about 24 hours away from kickoff week 12. Of course, a bunch of games done already. It was Thanksgiving down south, and with that, three games played out. We're going to spend a good portion of the next couple segments here talking about those games because they were fun, they were competitive, and they had some controversy as well. So Declan Kruger and I will get to that. My name's Connor Halley. He is Declan Kruger. And if you want to get a hold of us, 101260, probably the best way to do so through the text line. You can also give us a follow on social media on Twitter at Connor Halley, at Declan Kruger, and at TSN 1260. We'll try to get to your texts as well. And if you want to give us a phone call, 780-444-1260 throughout the show today as we get going. We'll keep you up to date on what's going on with the Oilers if you want that. Of course, World Cup is going on as well. We've got college football, a rivalry week, Michigan, Ohio State coming up. Declan, I know you're big into the college football scene, so I'm sure your eyes, as much as you're focused here, you got to be taking a little bit of a look to your left and watching what's on TV.
Absolutely. I mean, huge college football playoff implications in this one. You got to think the winner is going to have an auto bid. And even, you know, if it's a close game, Michigan, especially if they lose on the road, it's, and things go their way, you know, TCU falls out, USC drops the Pac-12 championship game, they could find themselves in. So, yeah, going to be a good game. Looking forward to that one. And, definitely going to be watching out of the corner of my eye.
It is Four Down Breakdown. So, like, we can talk a little bit of college football here. Do you have a favorite rivalry in collegiate football down south? I mean, Michigan, Ohio State is one that always comes to mind. You got Washington State. It's going to be later tonight, I think 8:30 kickoff, which is nice for us night owls. But do you have a favorite rivalry game at the college level, Declan?
Well, I think, like, I'm an Oregon fan, so I like Oregon State because of that. But it's never, I mean, in my time watching college football, Oregon State's never been much of a powerhouse. And Oregon on that West Coast has been borderline a blue blood. So that one's never been too intriguing for me. When you just talk about rivalries and the quality of the game, and they've fallen off the past couple of years, but Auburn with Alabama, when they play in the Iron Bowl every year, that's a game I really get up for because I really appreciate SEC football. I like it. It's hard, gritty. You win the game at the line, run defense. That's kind of the nature of that conference. And that was always, I mean, listen, last game of the season, we obviously remember the kick six that really, you know, kind of put that into overdrive about how good the rivalry really is. So that one's always been one of my favorites. But of course, you can't go wrong with Ohio State, Michigan. I think it goes Yankees, Red Sox, and then it goes Michigan, Ohio State when you talk about rivalries in American sports. So it's a can't miss game. It's one you always have to tune into. And the thing about that is, like, Auburn's had a down year. Michigan, ever since Jim Harbaugh has been back, they've been right in the mix. Like, these have been heads and tails, the two best teams in the Big Ten, and it's made for a really exciting rivalry. For the past, seven, 8 years, it's like Alabama's kind of run things over in Auburn ever since the kick six that I mentioned. Oregon State, like I talked about, Oregon's just ran away with it. This one is Ohio State, in the past couple of years, has the leg up. Michigan obviously won last year, but it's at least there's some semblance of competitiveness. And with the history in the two of them, it's just can't miss.
You mentioned the kick six. That was 2013, Alabama, Auburn, and Chris Davis returns a missed field goal at the end of the game to win it for Auburn. Now, to relate this back to the NFL, he signed with the LA San Diego Chargers at the time. And I still remember media members, because he played defensive back, asking Eric Weddle about him and that play. And Eric Weddle, safety for the Chargers, a very good player. Not Hall of Fame, but a good player, says, who cares? That was college. This is NFL. We really don't care about that. And just shot it down immediately. And that that always stood out to me. Like, okay, they've moved on from their college success. Declan, one game I will add to that one is number 15, Notre Dame taking on number 6,
yeah, USC. That's always a great rivalry as well.
5:30 for those of you who want to get into that one. So, yeah, lots of college football this weekend. And then tomorrow, NFL will get going. Lots we're going to get to here on the show today. Coming up at about 11:40, we will talk to Matt Paris. He covers the Washington Commanders with the Washington Times. The Commanders, kind of an interesting group this year, obviously playing in what we used to call the NFC Least. And now, I don't know if it's the NFC Beast, but it's a pretty good division out there. Right now, the Eagles atop the division at 9-1, Cowboys 8-3, Giants 7-4. But the Commanders sitting there 6-5. And when you look at the playoff picture in the NFC, they're right in there. Like, they're a game out, really.
I ran the numbers in the ESPN playoff simulator, and I have the Commanders getting in at that 7 seed, for what it's worth.
Would that be every team then, or do you have the Giants falling out?
I have the we'll talk about that when we recap the Thanksgiving games, but I do have the Giants falling out.
All right. Okay. Well, we will get more into that. We'll talk to Matthew Paris later on in the show. Of course, we'll have Yay or Nay at 12 o'clock, where Declan throws some things my way. We debate it and appreciate your feedback in that segment as well. At 12:20, Dan Leberfeld of Jets Confidential Magazine and Sirius XM NFL Radio will join us. The New York Jets, Coach Sal has them going in the right direction. But when your starting quarterback averages like 2.7 inches per play, and your team loses and you don't accept any responsibility because it's not your offense's fault, there's some questions there. And the culture that Sal is building with the Jets, obviously, you know, it didn't go too well. And he made a change at quarterback. Mike White will get the start for the Jets.
Was he Western Kentucky? He was somewhere. He was one of those obscure schools, I believe.
He played his college ball Southern Florida and Western Kentucky.
Okay, yeah, it was. So he had the 37 touchdown season at the Western Kentucky back in 2016. That's right.
Yeah, he did. And then obviously went on to the New York Jets, being drafted in the 5th round back in 2018. He had a little bit of a run last year, right? Yeah, he had a little bit of a run, and I think the meme sites had a lot of fun with him, proclaiming him to be the next great quarterback. He gets the start over Joe Flacco. Interesting there. I thought number 19 might get the go there, but they go with Mike White. And we'll talk to Dan Leberfeld about that, because it seems like the Jets, you know, definitely when you and I did the draft show back in the spring, we were losing our mind with this team. Like, oh my goodness, the draft picks that these guys are landing right now. Like, these are maybe not immediate impact players, but they're going to turn things around. Sauce Gardner was the one, I think, that we're both like, hey, there you go. You got your lockdown corner.
And then we saw he was an immediate impact player, as it turns out.
As it turned out, it worked out quite well. Later in the first round, they would trade back and get Jermaine Johnson. That was, I think, kind of the one that you and I were both like, good. Like, this is the aggressive nature you should have. You see a guy, you want to go get him, go get him. They also drafted Garrett Wilson out of Ohio State, a receiver that I was a very big fan of. I think he's had some injuries this season, but still putting up decent numbers.
Supremely talented, yeah. Very, very talented guy.
Yeah, the guy
he needs a Western Kentucky legend to be throwing him the ball. And we're going to see that this week
against
the Bears.
Or maybe Delaware. Maybe Delaware, but not BYU.
Anywhere, but is that where Joe Flacco went? He went to Delaware?
I believe so.
Wow. Yeah, anywhere but BYU is essentially what we're saying.
Not BYU. And we'll also bring in Britt Prendergast for Britt's Picks at 12:40. Tune in for that. One thing, since we talked about Zach Wilson, and there's a lot of people that kind of, you know, think that obviously they're, you know, and it's kind of the talking heads, the bigger names saying that, oh, there's no accountability from Zach Wilson, and that shouldn't be a surprise given his upbringing. I don't know if I buy into that one. I don't like to make generalizations about people, so it's tough to necessarily say, you know, with his upbringing, he doesn't take responsibility for things. I don't know. I honestly thought when he said the comment about, you know, they don't need to take responsibility for that loss to New England, I kind of thought he misheard or something, because it was just such a weird answer. But I want to go back to his pro day. And one thing that I hate with pro days in the NFL, he had a throw where he rolled to his left, stopped, and threw right. No one's chasing him. No one's playing defense. Like, it was, he showed off his arm talent, but we blew it so out of proportion. And I remember still to this day, I think, like, come on, guys. Like, just because you can make that throw with nobody out there doesn't mean you can make it in a game. Like, you make that throw in a game, that's probably picked off by your safety playing center field, right? Like, it was just so much hype. And I hope going forward, we take maybe a little less stock in pro days and quarterbacks making these dumb throws that really wouldn't be caught in the NFL's regular season. Declan, question of the day here. A little bit negative, but we're going to go with it. Let us know your responses at 10-12-60. And the question today, I'm giving you credit. You came up with this one. What was your worst moment as an NFL fan? So that could be, you know, maybe a fantasy football moment. I know there's some heartbreaking stories that have come from fantasy football. This past week, I actually got very lucky on the Monday nighter when Rondale Moore went out with injury at -6 yards. That propelled me to victory against my buddy Justin. I don't know if he's listening right now, but he was quite upset about that one. Maybe someone had a really bad fantasy football story. Maybe it's betting. Maybe it's, you know, as a fan, the day that you just, you still look back on and it pains you to think of the memories. Declan, why don't we hear your worst moment as an NFL fan?
Well, mine, like, when you want to talk about one singular moment, there is one that comes to mind, and I'll get to it in a second. But I mean, just watching the Bills for, like, until 2018, 2019, it was just a dumpster fire. So when you want, you can talk about that experience as a whole and having to watch like EJ Manuel, JP Lossman, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Fitzmagic, no disrespect, Nathan Peterman, like that whole era was just tough. But when you talk about one singular moment, it goes back to last season and it goes to the Bills Chiefs playoff game when the Bills do not get a chance to possess the ball in overtime. It's just an asinine rule. Obviously it's been changed for this season, but that one was such a kick while we're down because it was like, I felt, and I think Bills fans felt we were the better team for the majority of the game. We played a prevent defense and let Pat Mahomes throw it under to Kelsey and then throw another one to Tyreek Hill to get into the field goal range. But for the most part, we felt like we were the better team that game. Gabe Davis was on fire. Josh Allen was on fire. And then we lose the game on a coin flip. And I'm not saying Mahomes isn't great. I'm not saying the Chiefs aren't great. But we lose the game on a coin flip. We don't lose it on merit. It's not like we go out there and we get outplayed in every facet of the game. We just don't have a chance to possess the ball. And this was really a turning point. This was really, wow, like Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, these are 1-2 quarterbacks in the league. Wow, these Buffalo Bills really have Super Bowl aspirations. So when you want to talk about a singular moment or a singular game, to not have the opportunity to possess the ball in that overtime and just how that loss went through was my worst moment as a fan. But I also got to give a special shout out. I mean, watching Nathan Peterman start 4 games was also, doesn't get a lot worse than that. I heard a stat that if Nathan Peterman just spiked the ball into the ground every time he snapped the ball in the NFL, he would have a better quarterback rating than what he has now. That's how bad he was. And I had to watch that for 4 games. So that's pretty tough. But I go back to that game last year in the playoffs. And just heartbreaking. It was just heartbreaking because I feel like the better team didn't win and a coin flip dictated the outcome. So that's for me. What about you, Connor?
Well, you know what? It's funny because, you know, you talk about that, you know, that your quarterback not getting a chance to get on the field. I mean, it is really frustrating. And I always hear people say, like, well, you know, the people who defend it, well, your defense is part of your team. They should make a stop. Okay. Well, if both quarterbacks get the ball,
let both defenses make a stop.
Defenses get a chance, right? Like, it's okay. We want to maximize excitement. We don't want terrible controversy. Like, think about, you know, in history, the games we could have had with, like, hypothetically, Brady and Manning getting a chance to go head to head in overtime, going back and forth. There was a game 2004, 2005, where the Chargers beat the Colts in the playoffs. Peyton Manning didn't get off the bench. As a Chargers fan, I was stoked, but I still thought, you know, it's, you know, you'd like to see the best quarterback, one of the best of all time, get out there and make a play. So yeah, the overtime rule being changed in the playoffs, I'd like to see that in the regular season as well. Just opportunity. I love the college or the CFL overtime rules. Like,
they have it right
for some really great memories.
And that's like with Patrick Mahomes, it's never a doubt. Like, you knew he was going to go down and score. It was just like, oh, well, our only chance is to win this 50-50 coin flip. Like, you're not stopping Patrick Mahomes. It's a given. He's going to go down and score. So it's just when the coin flip goes their way, oh, that's it. That's the end of the game. And that's not how an NFL game should end. So,
he did that on Monday night as well against the Chargers. They gave him like 23 seconds.
You can. Stupid. It's never a doubt with him.
Also, you talked about Nathan Peterman. I will always go back to that game against the Chargers. You might not want to talk about it, but just they won 54-24 and the interceptions, five picks. Casey Hayward, Trevor Williams, Corey Leggett, defensive lineman. Oh, wait, no, these are sort of tackles for losses. Interceptions. Casey Hayward had two. Trey Boston, Trevor Williams, and Corey Toomer. It was a funny game. Joey Bosa was mic'd up during that game, and it was just hilarious. Like, there was nothing the Bills could do. Maybe that put them in the right direction. Declan, I'll share some pain since you just, you know, bared your soul there. 2006 Chargers-Patriots AFC divisional game. The Chargers were 14-2 that year. LT broke the touchdown record. And at the end of the game, the Chargers were up 21-17. And the Brady-led Patriots were driving. 4th and 5, 6 minutes left in the game. Brady throws an interception to Marlon McCree. At that point, you know, Chargers would have been up, had the ball, and LaDainian Tomlinson probably could have come close to icing the game. But Marlon McCree decides to run the ball back. He doesn't slide despite the whole sideline yelling at him to get down. Troy Brown, what heck of a player, forces the fumble. I mean, he played receiver and quarterback, cornerback. Rashay Caldwell recovers it, and then Rashay Caldwell, the former Charger, would go on to score the touchdown to win the game. Rest in peace, Rashay Caldwell. Man, I enjoyed watching him for a couple years with the Chargers. And yeah, then Nate Kading had a chance to tie it up, missed the game. And that was the end of Marty Schottenheimer's tenure with the Chargers. They went on to bring in Norv Turner, which I think a lot of people still were pretty upset by. The GM and Marty did not have a good relationship. And that one to me, like, had Marlon McCree just slid, the Chargers potentially go on to win that game. They had home field the rest of the way. That was probably their best chance to win a Super Bowl. And Marlon McCree trying to return the ball into traffic ended up costing them. So, pains me to bring that one up.
Well, I want to ask you something kind of along the same lines, and this isn't like an underhanded dig or anything at you, just so you know. But just like on the subject, it was the 2008 Chargers, I think, right, that had the number one ranked offense and the number one ranked defense and missed the playoffs. I mean, like, what was that like for you as a fan? Like, how did you even comprehend something like that? Just a lot of tequila?
Well, I don't think it was 2008. I got to go back and actually look at the years. You know, like you, as a Bills fan, it's tough, right? Because we've had so many heartbreaking seasons, and they all kind of mesh together.
It was 2010, it looks like.
Okay. Now that'll help me go back and look at the pain here. Because that is a record that I think, Declan, is going to be tough to ever duplicate. Yeah, second in the division at 9-7. That was right after Tomlinson left. I mean, you almost have to laugh at it, right? There were so many special teams miscues. I believe that might have been like when Nate Kading really started to fall off. They lost to the Patriots by 3, the Rams by 3.
Yeah, I'm looking, 5 of their 7 losses but were by one score.
Yeah.
And they only had 2 wins within one score, so they were blowing everyone out and they were losing close.
It's one of those weird things. Like, I mean, if you went back, and I think there have been productions done, like little videos from like the Analytics Society, the people who can put all this stuff together, like how off, like how it would just never happen again. And yeah, the season was wild. The games, like you said, you beat up on teams and then you'll lose close games. We don't like to talk about that one, Declan. It was a tough one. But those Charger teams in that era were so much fun to watch. LT on a young Rivers, defensively Sean Merriman and Sean Phillips, rushing the passer, Jamal Williams in the middle, like
Antonio Cromartie,
Antonio Gates.
Electric City.
He was Cromartie was great until, you know, he decided not to tackle Sean Green in the playoffs and the Jets beat the Chargers. Anyways, we could talk about the heartbreak of our teams for a while. But yeah, 10-12-60, send those texts in. Let us know what was your worst moment as an NFL fan. We'll get to those later on. Now, we're going to take a break. Still to come on the show, Matt Paris will join us to talk about the Commanders. We'll talk about the Jets with Dan Leberfeld. And Britt Prendergast will come by to make her picks this week. Up next, though, we'll recap Thursday night, Thursday afternoon, and Thursday morning as 3 games with some controversy. Declan as a defensive back, Connor as a former wide receiver. We'll share our thoughts on Hunter Henry. Did he catch it? That's up next here on 4 Down Breakdown here on TSN 1260.
Welcome back to Four Down Breakdown with Connor Halley and Declan Kruger. Only on Edmonton Sports Leader, TSN 1260.
We are back here on Four Down Breakdown talking all things NFL. We are just under 24 hours away from kickoff tomorrow. The Sunday slate of games gets going at 11 a.m. And we're going to make our predictions later on in the show with Britt Prendergast. Connor Halley, Declan Kruger with you here. 10-12-60 if you want to chime in. Our question of the day, worst moment as an NFL fan. We got one here from Rick saying, Connor, that Colts-Chargers game stands out to me. Big Colts fan. Didn't love seeing Peyton Manning on the sideline the whole time. Yeah, and that I can speak like I've been on the other side too now with Justin Herbert sitting on the sideline watching teams march down and beat them. Like it's not fun. You want to see both marquee quarterbacks out there. Even if it's not marquee, you want to see a guy get the chance to drive his team down and get them back into it. It's almost like if you went to the NHL and a game was tied and you're like, you know what, we're just going to let McDavid go up against the goalie. And we're going to end it right after there. We're not going to give like the Rangers, for example, a chance to tie it up. We're just going to let McDavid go. And, you know, maybe in the NHL, you might actually take that because I think your goalie has a pretty good chance to take that, to make that stop. But not a big fan of those overtime rules we've seen in the past. If you are curious in the Oilers game today, and if you're driving and you don't want to hear this, I'll give you a little second to turn down the radio so you don't get a spoiler. But the Oilers now trail the Rangers 1-0. Matias Janmark just taking a penalty, so they'll have to kill this one off. Once this game wraps up, Gazzola, Cassie, and Walker back for your post-game coverage on the Don Wheaton GM on White post-game show. Declan, let's go back to Thursday for your Bills. Nice little win, maybe a little bit closer than you would have hoped, but they were victorious over the Detroit Lions 28-25. You also have the Cowboys knocking off the Giants 28-20, and a fun one on the night game as the Vikings got past the Patriots 33-26. The Vikings, I said it on the show on Thursday, I think they're a very good team. I don't know if they're great quite yet, but that was a good game by them. Kirk Cousins on primetime playing well. That's a good sign. But let's go to the first game, Bills-Lions. How worried were you in that one as a Bills fan?
I was a little worried. It started last week, honestly, with the Cleveland game, where I was a little bit ready to hit the panic button early. And it kind of trailed over into this game. Listen, I think the Bills are a very good team. I think they're going to make a deep playoff run. I think you probably would agree. But they're not the Bills that I thought they were going to be. I thought this was a team that was going to steamroll the teams they were supposed to steamroll. I thought they were going to drop a couple games, probably finish somewhere in the 14-3 range, you know, lose a couple games late. I did think they were going to lose that game to Kansas City that they won earlier in the season. But the Bills are not the team I thought they were going to be. They're not these, you know, world-class juggernauts that I and a lot of other media members had built them up to be. So I, you know, nervous isn't the right word, but I just think I've had to lower my expectations a little bit with this Bills team that maybe they're not, you know, these juggernauts, Super Bowl odds on Josh Allen, MVP favorites I thought they were going to be. And on the flip side, the Lions have turned into a very frisky team. I mean, they're not going to make the playoffs. They may not even finish the season with a winning record, but the Lions can play with anybody, and the Lions can beat probably 30 teams in this league. The teams that match up worse for them, I think the Chiefs are a team they wouldn't have a chance with. They're not going to have to worry about that. And then the Eagles, but the Lions are a well-coached team. Dan Campbell has them in shape. They play hard for their guys. They're playing well within their capabilities. And the Lions are a frisky team. They're going to win some games we don't expect them to win. They were riding a 3-game winning streak coming into this one, and they almost knock off the Bills at home. So, I mean, the Bills, worry isn't the right word, but I just think I've had to levy the expectations a little bit. And the Lions are, they're a frisky team. They can play with anybody, and they'll play anyone hard.
Oilers just giving up a power play goal to the Rangers, 2-0 Rangers. I think when you look at the Buffalo Bills, Micah Hyde, I mean, that was a big loss. I mean, he's a guy, like, I know you have Jordan Poyer already, but Hyde back there was kind of that leader, has everyone in the right place. Von Miller left the game with the knee injury. Looks like he's going to be okay. Doesn't require surgery, so that's a good sign for him. I mean, really, you just want the Bills to kind of be status quo until the playoffs, and then you have, well, you need a healthy Von Miller. I think it was Luke Wilson, TSN's very own former tight end in the NFL, said like the Bills, there are some signs to worry about with this team. So we'll have to see how they go down the stretch. The second game on Thanksgiving Thursday had the Giants falling to the Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott looked like he's in prime Thanksgiving form. CeeDee Lamb had a really good game, great catch that did not count as a touchdown, but a great catch nonetheless, over 100 receiving yards. Cowboys improved to 8-3. The Giants 7-4. when Jason Strudwick, noted Giants fan, and I had a conversation about the Giants, I thought this was a team that could win, you know, 6, 7, 8 games. But I thought they'd reach that win total by the end of the season. I thought, you know, 500 and then, you know, dip behind and then maybe get, you know, 7 wins on the season. They're there already. It's week 12. But Declan, not too optimistic here about this Giants team going forward, especially in that division.
No, the Giants are done. The Giants are done. The Giants are not going to make the playoffs. And no disrespect to the Giants, because I think for the most part, they've exceeded expectations, right? I mean, if you told them coming in, hey, when week 12 rolls around, you guys are going to be 7-4. You know, you guys are going to be sitting nice and pretty in a wild card spot. They would say, okay, yeah, like that's good. We've exceeded expectations. But you look at the remaining schedule. They have to play the Eagles twice. They have to play the Vikings in Minnesota, and they have to play the Commanders twice, who have won 5 of their last 6. They're gonna get a gimme game against another frisky team in the Colts, but they're playing the Colts at home. That should be a win. But I look at this team and I look at them going 2-4 down the stretch. I think they finish at 9-8. And when you look at that, like, and when you look at the expectations for this team coming in and Brian Daboll is a first year coach and, you know, Darius Slayton has all this money taking up so much salary cap, no real weapon, you know, Saquon, obviously healthy, but we know what his history is like. Like, there's no real standouts on the defense. We're going to see what Kayvon Thibodeau can do. You would think of 9-8 as being successful, but when you look at this team being 7-2 and how they've tailed off, no, this team is done. This team is not going to make the playoffs. For one, they don't have the quarterback to do it in Daniel Jones. They don't have a good enough defense to stop crazy offensive threats they're going to be facing in the Eagles twice and the Vikings. And the Commanders, with how well they're playing, those games, listen, if you had asked us 4 or 5 weeks ago, those games would have been circle games for the New York Giants. Those games have become very, very important. And I think they're going to drop one of them for sure. Maybe both. So the Giants, it's tough because they're going to finish the season. Like, I think they're going to finish the season 9-8. And you would say that's exceeded preseason expectations. But when you look at where they were a couple weeks ago, 7-2 riding high, you're going to now, if you're a Giants fan, it's kind of shifting into, wow, this has been a disappointing season. So, you know, the Giants, they got their coach. Brian Daboll's the guy. They have some pieces they can build around. But as a whole, this Giants team is more what we thought they were than what they weren't.
You know what? And Daniel Jones, I don't think he's been the reason they lose games. Like, I don't know how much confidence I have in him to take the ball, march you down, and win a game. But 10 touchdowns to 4 interceptions, completing 65% of his passes. Like, he's been okay this year.
Yeah,
he's been the reason they're losing.
Daniel Jones, like, they haven't won in spite of Daniel Jones the way you might say the Jets have won in spite of Zach Wilson. He's been perfectly average. But it's pretty tough to win with an average quarterback in the NFL. And when you look at the division they're playing in, it's pretty tough to win in a division that tight and what's become that good with an average quarterback.
Final game of the Thursday slate of games. There was 3 of them. A fun one, Minnesota taking on the New England Patriots. The Vikings do get the win, but the bigger storyline that came out of that one was the Hunter Henry catch, then no catch that did not result in a touchdown. I have to say, I do not like the New England Patriots. I feel like most fans in the league don't, so I was not too upset by the call. But when I look at the ruling in the NFL, Declan, and we'll get your thoughts on this as well, but to me, as soon as the ball touches the ground, you can go one of two ways. Did the ball bobble or did it not bobble? If the ball touches the ground and it doesn't bobble, you don't wobble it at all, it's a catch. The second it comes loose for a little, like a millisecond, as soon as there's that bobble, it's going to be a no catch to me. Hunter Henry did do a good job, I think, of getting his hands underneath, but the ball did touch the turf and it came loose. So to me, no touchdown. That was the right call, in my opinion. Had he made sure to get his hand all the way underneath and it doesn't touch the ground, that's a catch on the 1 yard line. Or like the 1 inch line. But I think with the ball touching the ground, combined with the fact that he bobbles it, it's a no catch. It's incomplete. What did you see?
I think you can make an argument for it both ways. I understand what you're saying up with the bobble. I thought he had enough control with that hand under to qualify it as a catch. But like I said, I mean, listen, that was one of the ones that's so ticky-tack, and the rules get
plus
so...
breaking the plane.
Yeah, exactly. And the rules get so... Like, there's such gray area with these catches, it seems like. We've seen it over and over again. So I can see an argument for either way. I personally would have called it a catch, which is strange because I'm a DB. So I, you know, DB bias runs rampant. I love incomplete passes. But I thought, no, I thought he did enough, had enough control. But I see what you're saying about the bobble and all that. So I listen, I see an argument both ways. But you know, gun to my head, if I'm the referee on that field, I'm calling it a catch.
And I mean, I'll admit it, as a Patriots hater, I'm like, I don't care. And Hunter Henry, he left the Chargers, so I wasn't upset to see it. I think the NFL, one thing that they could look at doing is saying, hey, if it touches the ground, it's incomplete. That would take away all controversy. So receivers, don't let it touch the ground.
Which is, yeah.
Roll if you have to, but don't let it touch the ground. If it touches the ground, it's incomplete. Doesn't matter if you have control or not. I mean, it would suck, but at least it's black and white there, and you would know. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk to Matt Paris. He covers the Commanders for the Washington Times. A quick little update in the Oilers game as well. Spoiler alert, if you want to turn your volume down quickly. The second Rangers goal did not count. Offside. Good challenge by the coaching staff of the Oilers. So still remains 1-0, 6 minutes left in the first period. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll head up to Washington and talk about the Commanders with Matt Paris here on 4 Down Breakdown.
You're listening to the 4 Down Breakdown with Connor Halley and Declan Kruger on Edmonton's sports leader, TSN 1260.
Welcome back to 4 Down Breakdown here on TSN 1260. Connor Halley, Declan Kruger with you. If you want to reach us, 101260 is the text line, at Connor Halley, at Declan Kruger on Twitter, also at TSN 1260. It is 11:41 here in the city. We're going to head out to Washington now and talk about the Commanders with beat reporter with the Washington Times, Matt Paris. Matt, thank you so much for doing this today. How are things going?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Glad you could come on here. And for the Commanders, it seems like since Taylor Heinicke took over as a starting quarterback, things are going pretty well. They're 4-1, the only loss coming to the Minnesota Vikings. And it looks like Ron Rivera has the team going in the right direction. Since he took over as starting quarterback from Carson Wentz, what have you noticed about this group that's really shown and reflected well on the field?
Yeah, it's funny. If you just look at Taylor Heinicke's stat line, it's not the most impressive in the world. You could just kind of maybe say that he performed bad even, but I wouldn't go that far. I think he's been fine under center, and I think the big benefit to him, there's a couple things. One is he knows the offense and is really decisive where he throws the balls. You know, they've really kind of cut down on their turnovers with him under center. He doesn't take nearly the same amount of sacks that Carson Wentz did. And then the other thing is just he has this kind of energy about him. He likes to say this cliche thing of, you know, he plays every game like it's his last, but it's kind of true, and guys really feed off that energy. They've really kind of rallied around him, and I think that's, if you're looking for kind of how these offenses improved, it's really started with him.
Now, I'll just quickly hop over to the other side of the ball. Kind of big news when you have a guy who is as good as Chase Young is, unfortunately hasn't been able to get going. He's listed as questionable last I saw. Any chance we can see him out there this weekend?
Yeah, I think it's trending positive. I mean, we'll see. But I think it was kind of an encouraging thing, if you want to read into it, that he talked to the media this week for a few minutes. That's normally an indication that they feel like he's maybe in a better position to play. Ron Rivera said yesterday that he's had two really good days of practice, hadn't really gone that far the previous weeks where he was sort of questionable up in the air to play. So if he does, still going to be really relatively limited. He's going to play 12 to 16 snaps. But as he was telling us, you know, one of those plays is still enough to maybe change the impact of the game. So I think they're really looking forward to him being out there. It's just a question of how much of an impact can he have.
Matt, one thing I want to talk about, just jumping back to Taylor Heinicke, I mean, you talk about how he's been with this team and how they kind of rally around him. And you're looking now, I mean, contracts ending at the end of the season. The market value is somewhere around, you know, 19.7 annual average value. Are the Commanders looking at bringing back this guy and tossing him the bag a little bit? Is this going to be the quarterback of the future, or at least the foreseeable future? Or is this just a guy? I mean, I know the team's rallied around him, but is this a guy that's come in, done what he's supposed to do, but come draft time, we're looking at someone else?
Yeah, I think they would still look to replace him. As much as they like him You know, they did draft Sam Howell this past spring in the fifth round. They're kind of grooming him, maybe not to be the quarterback of the future, but they are intrigued with his potential. And then, you know, they did chase. Obviously, they acquired Carson Wentz this past spring as a replacement over Heinicke. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they try and chase a veteran again, because this is a really talented defense, and that they can get someone who can actually lift the ceiling of their offense. But, you know, you've got to give Heinicke a lot of credit. Maybe he has played well enough to be back on another one-year deal, but or something like that. But it just kind of remains to be seen what they want to do with this contract.
Matt Paris of the Washington Times joining us here on 4 Down Breakdown on TSN 1260. I'm Declan Kruger with Connor Halley. One more thing. I mean, just bluntly, is this a playoff team? Because I think you look, you know, coming into the beginning of the season, I think a lot of people thought they were probably going to be fighting for the third or fourth spot in the NFC East with the Giants. You look now, I mean, five of the last six, the remaining schedule, you got the Falcons at home, Browns at home. There are a couple tough games there, you know, in San Francisco against the Cowboys, but two with the Giants were on a slip. I ran the numbers. I put it in the simulator. I have them making the playoffs at the seventh spot. I mean, just bluntly, do you think this is a playoff team this year?
Yeah, I kind of do. I mean, I wouldn't have said that 3 weeks ago, but the way that this defense has improved, I think that's kind of the number one difference in this team. As much as we've talked about Taylor Heinicke, don't sleep on the defensive improvement. I think it's night and day from where it was at the beginning of the season. And so you have that in store now. The Giants are slipping, I think, which just really helps. I think next weekend's matchup in New York could be telling in a lot of ways, because, you know, if Washington beats the Falcons Sunday, and because the Giants lost, if Washington wins that next one, they have the opportunity to pass them in the standings because of the tiebreaker. So that one next Sunday is really huge for Washington, but they have to get you know, take care of business against Atlanta this weekend first.
When you look at this offense as a whole, I mean, some really nice pieces, actually. I mean, the league knows Terry McLaurin, how good he is, but Curtis Samuel and then Jahan Dotson drafted this past draft. You know, nice receiving core there, the running backs with Antonio Gibson and Brian Robinson Jr., who might be, you know, the best story in the NFL this season coming back from that gunshot wound. Like, if you find that quarterback of the future, this looks like an offense that could be built to have success for a long time here.
Right. I mean, that was kind of the selling point for even acquiring a guy like Carson Wentz in the first place. I mean, it was that this supporting cast was going to elevate him in maybe the ways that, you know, Indianapolis could not, or even his last season in Philly. You know, Terry McLaurin, I think, is having a really good season. Maybe the touchdowns aren't there, but with Heinicke back under center, his stats are a lot better than they were with Wentz. Curtis Samuel has been used in a lot of creative ways that I think is very encouraging. And then the guy who has been quieter lately because he's been hurt is Jahan Dotson. But before that hamstring injury that sidelined him after the first four games, he was having a tremendous start and looked even to be maybe one of the best receivers in this class. You know, he had incredible chemistry with Carson Wentz and was this nice red zone target for them, has really impressive hands, a nice catch radius. So, you know, those three are some of the best receivers that Washington has had in a long time. They had, you know, the posse out at practice a few weeks ago, and they were saying that, you know, these guys are on track to be maybe as good as them. I think that may be an exaggeration, but it is a really impressive group.
Matt Paris joining us here on 4 Down Breakdown, covers the Commanders with the Washington Times. You can give him a follow on Twitter at @Matthew_Paris. And Matthew, I mean, when you look at Ron Rivera, he's in his third year now with the Commanders organization, 20-24 record. What have you thought of what he's been able to do as a coach? Obviously, there was some kind of rebuilding and some roster issues they had to deal with, but what have your overall impressions been of Rivera with his tenure here in Washington?
I think it's been pretty impressive, all things considered, when you consider how much turmoil has been off the field. You know, you think of everything that's happened kind of with Dan Snyder and the team being in the news, kind of with controversies from their sexual harassment scandal and being investigated with Congress. His job is to get the guys focused to play football, and by the most part, they've done that. It, you know, I think there are some negatives to him as a coach. Maybe he's a little bit conservative with it, you know, managing the clock, and his teams do tend to start slow every year. But where they are at in the position they are this season right now, I think a lot of the credit goes to him.
Matt, it might sound like a bit of a silly question, but I mean, we've seen the reports. We saw Dan Snyder, you know, hired the financial team looking to sell. Reports came out about Jeff Bezos. If you were to throw a percent chance that he's going to be the owner of this Commanders team in the next couple of years, what would that be?
Oh, I don't know percentage-wise, but I think the way that it's been categorized is if he's interested and he's serious about a bid, who's topping Jeff Bezos? You know, he's the fourth richest man in the world. I don't think Elon Musk wants to own a football team at the moment, especially given how much he's invested into Twitter. And so, you know, it is, I think it is Bezos is for the taking, but that, you know, he has to show formal interest. He didn't really deny the rumors that he was interested, but that goes a long way to thing. And another thing to consider too is, would Dan Snyder be willing to sell to Jeff Bezos? You know, if Jeff Bezos is coming in at $7 billion and the others are coming around $6 billion, then yeah, that $1 billion is going to make a difference. But, you know, Bezos owns the Washington Post. The Post has been behind a lot of the stories that have gotten Snyder in trouble in the first place. Is there that ego clash there? It's kind of something I'm interested to see.
Is it not a conflict of interest with the Thursday night games being on Amazon Prime? How does that work? What are the semantics behind that?
You know, it's an interesting question. I'm not really sure. I mean, I know that he's still involved with Amazon, but he's not technically their CEO. I don't think he's running day by day at Amazon still. So I think maybe that gives him enough wiggle room. I honestly don't know how that thinks, but the NFL has spoken highly about Jeff Bezos in the past. I think they would probably make an exception even if it was a conflict of interest. You know, I think they're excited to get him in the ownership fraternity, even if it's the Commanders or maybe the Seahawks online or something like that.
Matt, a couple more questions for you here. We really appreciate you joining us talking about the Commanders. Is FedEx Field as bad as the reports are? I mean, are the pipes bursting? Are they having some issues there?
Yes. I mean, I think it's been a little bit better this season. You know, there's not as necessarily the fans aren't spilling over onto Jalen Hurts as they were last year. The pipes are a little better, but it is, you know, in terms of game day atmosphere, Alex Smith recently said on a podcast that it was kind of the worst in the country. And I haven't been to every stadium, but I've been to a lot. And it is kind of night and day about how the atmosphere there, it's gone a lot of, you know, this was a stadium one time that, you know, they had the best attendance in the NFL or near the best attendance. And it has just really sank the last few years. They're last in attendance right now. They've scaled back the stadium, taking away thousands and thousands of seats. Capacity is only around 62,000 at the moment, whereas, you know, 10 years ago it was in the 90s. And so it's just not really a raucous atmosphere, and they are searching for a new stadium, and they really need something to kind of jolt the area because it is a sad state of affairs at the moment.
Now, Matt, the Commanders taking on the Atlanta Falcons tomorrow. They enter this game as 4-point favorites. If there are any, a couple keys to victory, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think the thing is really stopping down Atlanta's run game. That's Atlanta's bread and butter. Cordell Patterson is a really impressive player, the way that they've been able to use him. Marcus Mariota, I think, has had a nice season, given them a threat on the run with his legs as a quarterback. I think Washington, that's kind of been their strength. As good as their defense is, the thing that they've excelled the best at is shutting down the run. And so if you can do that and you can contain Atlanta, then, I like their chances for victory.
Matt, thank you so much for doing this today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go. Matt Paris from the Washington Times. You can give him a follow on Twitter at Matthew_Paris. We appreciate that. I did not know that Bezos owned the Washington Post, so I looked into it. He paid $250 million in cash.
Oh, yeah, that was a big story because it was such a, like, you know, the rich, the billionaires control the media. They control the narrative now. That was a huge talking point a little while back. I think it was a couple years now, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. But, yeah, it was a big thing.
2013.
Oh my goodness. So way, way longer than that. Time is really flying if that was 2013.
Yeah, made it. I mean, after 3 years, the paper was finally profitable for the first time since he purchased it in 2013. What a baller move. $250 million in cash. Does that, like, literally, did he, like, have, like, 20 of his employees walking in with sacks of $100 bills? Like,
He is probably one of the few who has access to the ultra rare $250 million bill. So he probably just used one of those. Yeah.
Go. Oh my goodness. I just like, I don't even know. That just seems like a scene out of like, I've never seen some shows, Billions or something, you know, like Ari Gold and Entourage just buying a company with straight cash. That's a baller move.
Randy
right there.
Moss paying is fine.
Straight cash. Well, me. Yeah, exactly. Declan, why don't we take a break here very quickly when we come back? Yay or nay, we got Dan Lieberfeld to talk Jets and Brits picks. You're listening to Four Down Breakdown here on TSN 1260.